Vov Teves, Sunday the 28th of December, Rabbi Yohonasan Hughes, Double Think.
While people are coming in, maybe we'll start with the Milsa de Bichuso. There was a man who came to his congregational rabbi, and he said to him, "Rabbi, I'm distraught." He had tears rolling down his cheeks. He says, "Rabbi, I've brought my kid up to be a Jew. I gave him Sunday morning Heder classes. I gave him a bar mitzvah. He comes back, he's 20 years old. He says to me, 'I want to become a Christian. What do I do, Rabbi?'" So the rabbi says, "Funny you should come to me, but I also have a son, and I put him through years of Jewish schools. He went to yeshiva. He even went to Kollel. And he's come back to me and he says, 'Father, I want to become a Christian.'" So the man said to his rabbi, "So what did you do?" So he said, "Like any other good rabbi, I asked God what to do." "And what did God say?" says the man. So the rabbi says, "God said, 'Funny you should come to me.'" Okay. You can take the rabbi out of the pulpit, but you can't take the pulpit out of the rabbi. Chochma Bagoyim Tamin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, an American author who died in 1940, once said that the test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in one's mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. This is the polite version of the Briskarov's Funakasha Shtortmannit. From Akasha, nobody ever died. What does this mean, this phrase of the Briskarov? That Akasha in Emuna, which affects our Yiddishkeit, is not meant to bother us, we don't die from it. We know that a Torah Jew with any degree of ideological sophistication has to be able to deal with contradictions in life. We have to be able to deal with steerers that affect the basic essence of who and what we are. It's too easy to play sometimes the poshita yid. I'm just a poshita yid. I don't think about these things. When we're faced with serious steerers, we have to have an approach. The examined life inevitably brings us to innumerable inconsistencies that we have to somehow face and stare in the face and have an approach to, in order to live a life of emunah and shtortmannit. So how can we carry on as from a yidden when we have to deal with so many of life's unanswerable questions? And that's what I want to talk about today, with your permission, or without. Is how do we deal with questions in life that we can't answer totally? And I want to home in on a particular facet of this week's Sedra. So steerers exist not only when secular thinking clashes with Torah thinking, but even in reality itself, in the Bria. For decades, scientists have had a machlokas, for example, about light. What is light? It is a particle, or is it a wave? So they've been going back and forth. The answer is, Efshe l'kayim shneihem. Sometimes light behaves as a wave, and sometimes light behaves as a particle. Einstein said, we're faced with two contradictory pictures of reality. Separately, they can't answer the problem, but together, we can understand how light works. But it doesn't fall into either category. There's a steerer. Time. Time is immutable. It keeps going on and on forever. On the other hand, if you travel at the speed of light in space, then time moves at different speeds for different people. It can be immutable, objective, and subjective. Time can also be relative and specific to a particular person in a particular place. Again, Akasha, a contradiction in the Bria. Steerers exist also in the Ikrei Hadas. In our Jewish ideology, one of the most famous ones is Hashem's knowledge. Hashem knows everything. He's really, really, really clever. His knowledge is perfect. But not just his knowledge of what's going on now, but his predictive abilities. He knows exactly what I am going to do and what all of us are ever going to do before we've done it. He knows what decisions we're going to take, choice A or choice B. He has ultimate knowledge, and the knowledge is predictive. He knows in advance what we're going to do. So therefore, how can we ever have free will? If God's knowledge is perfect, and he knows exactly if I'm going to choose A or B, then do I really have a choice to pick the other, to pick B instead of A? He knows it's going to be A. I can't contradict his knowledge. And Bechira Chofshis somehow tells us that we have the free ability to choose what to do without any interference from the Almighty whatsoever. Hashem has somehow been metzamtzein, contracted himself to allow for Bechira. Nevertheless, he knows exactly what I'm going to do. Now, I'm not saying there aren't terutzim. I'm just not saying them. Rambam discusses it, the Ritva. At the end of the day, it's a kasha. I'm not saying there aren't approaches to it. But it's another contradiction at first glance. Ishtadlus. You've got to do your ishtadlus. B'zeis ha'pecha teich lechem. Nevertheless, we say, poiseach es yodecho, u'maspia l'chol chai rotzei. Hashem provides everything for us. It's nothing to do with us, it's all Hashem. Nevertheless, we're chayev to do a modicum of ishtadlus based on our level of betochen. Again, another clash, another sphera, another contradiction, this time affecting the way we live our lives as Yidden. Do I work, or do I allow the blessings to fall down from Shemayim? Mon HaShemayim. That is another kasha in our Yiddishkeit. Chazal tell us that the universe was created some 5,775 years ago. Science tainas that the universe is 14 billion years old, and our Earth is 4.5 billion years old, based on certain isotopes and the way they behave with meteorites and soil, different things that give evidence away about how old all of this is. So again, it's a clash between our way of thinking and nature, we'll call it science. Again, many approaches to answer this question, but there's a kasha in the first instance that we have to deal with if we're going to be serious thinking from people. The Mabul, the great deluge, the flood. The Mabul covered the whole of the earth, apart from Eretz Yisrael, Midrash, wiping out every creature. Yet, there's no archaeological records of this. The Chinese apparently had bureaucratic records dating back before, during and after the flood. There's no mention of it. There are answers to this. There is an approach. But nevertheless, it's a kasha, another sphere, another contradiction in our life to deal with. Schar v'oinesh. We say that kol man David Rachman of the tav of it. Rabbi Akiva said that. Nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva was tortured to death for teaching Torah. We believe in two worlds and one God. So we understand that tzaddik v'ra loy, we have approaches to it. We say, schar mitzvah b'hai alma leka, oinesh aveir b'hai alma ikka. Sometimes we don't understand what's going on around us, why innocent people have to suffer so much, and why the worst of the worst of the worst seem to prosper. So there are terutzim, but I'm just not saying them right now. One who doesn't find an approach to these types of questions in life is left with either two responses. The first is cognitive dissonance. It reminds me of the man who became frum, because his rabbi told him, if you become frum, you'll have everything. You'll get married, you'll have money, you'll have children, everything will be well, even your grandma will get well again. And when none of these things happened, He shed himself of the religion he'd taken on and went back to basics. Because he felt this cognitive dissonance. How can there be a just, loving God and my life not fall in line? And I'm doing his will. Look at what I'm doing for the Almighty. Nevertheless, it's not coming back to me. So he threw away his religion as a result. So either we're left with cognitive dissonance, which is the pain that we feel as a result of the stirrer, as a result of the clash, of the contradiction. We cannot hold two things in our minds at the same time. We don't have the first-rate intelligence that Fitzgerald was talking about. We're short from the kasher. We're dying from the kasher. The other approach is even worse. And this is the title of today's presentation. Doublethink, which is a phrase coined by George Orwell in his famous work 1984, which was written in 1949. And he talks about this idea called doublethink. Whereas when you have two opposite ideas in your mind, which are a kasher, which are a steerer to one another, you believe in both of them, be'emunah shleima. It's like, you know, we have now in pluralism, religious pluralism, when you can have a theological debate with somebody, and at the end, you say, I'm right, and you're right. When there is no truth, there is no emes. In the tekufa of emes tehein ederes that we're in. We're in a double sheker, by the way, because it's alma de shikra, this world is olam ha-sheker, and it's a tekufa of sheker within olam ha-sheker. So therefore you can have a debate with someone and say, I'm right, and you're right. There's no objective truth. This is affecting our dor specifically more than most. But nevertheless, this idea of doublethink is a deliberate lie. I pretend as if I believe in emunah shleima in the first option, as long as it suits me, and then as soon as it gets uncomfortable, I pull the other one back from the oblivion, and I believe in the other opposing idea. This is the ultimate self-betrayal. To believe in something until it becomes uncomfortable, and suddenly I don't believe it anymore. It's often when religious thinkers come into contact with scientists or intellectual atheists. Somehow the Torah becomes just a parable for 5 minutes. And then they go back to preaching that the Torah is MS and everything in it is true. Did the Akedah happen? Oh, it's just a story. Something happened. So that's what I call, or Orwell would have called, doublethink. That's even worse. In fact, it reminds me of the rabbi who was counselling a married couple who were having shalom bias issues. And he heard both sides out, and he said to the man, the husband, you're right. And then he heard from the wife, he said, you're right. They said, Rabbi, how can we both be right? One of us has got to be wrong. It was his mother-in-law, I think, came in and said this. How can they both be right? They've got to be one or the other. So he said, you're right as well. This is doublethink. And that affects all of us in Olam HaSheker. So, I want to try and show you an example of a steerer coming out of this week's Sedra Vayichi, where we will either be led into cognitive dissonance, the pain of the kasher, can't deal with it, or we will be led into the doublethink zone, where we'll have to pretend that we believe in both, and then somehow go on living with a straight face. But maybe there is a third approach, which I believe is the right approach. Okay, let's tune in. Unless everyone already has been. Vaychal Yaakov Letzavois Espanov. Jacob, had finished commanding his kids, his children. V'yeesof raglov el amito, he pulled his feet into his bed. Vayigva, and he perished. Vayeosef el amov, he was gathered unto his people. And what did Yosef do? Vaytzav Yosef es avodov es haroif, he brought the doctors in. Lachanoit es oviv, to embalm his father, to mummify him in some way. Vayechantu haroif mes Yisrael, and they embalmed him, ready for burial. Then they sat shiva. Then Yosef returns to Mitzrayim. Vayoshav Yosef Mitzrayimah hu ve'echov, v'cholo oylem itoy likbor es oviv. They got ready to prepare the burial of Yaakov. Achri kovri es oviv. Vayiru achi Yosef ki meis avihem. And the brothers saw that Yaakov Avinu had died. And then they had concerns about how Yosef would treat them. The Torah says, Mefurish, Yaakov Avinu died. Yet, Gemara in Tainis, look it up, hey on the base, the famous statement of Rabbi Yitzchok responding to Rabbi Nachman after a healthy meal. Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yitzchok quoted Rabbi Yochanan, who said, Yaakov Avinu loy meis. Jacob, our forefather, didn't die. He was shtortman nimmt. Omar Lay, so Rabbi Nachman didn't seem to like this statement from Rabbi Yitzchok, and he said, V'ki bichti softus of the naya v'chantuch at naya v'kidru kivraya. For nothing they embalmed him. For nothing they gave him a hesped. He had a pulse when they were burying him. What does it mean to say, gentlemen, brothers, comrades? What does it mean to say that Yaakov Avinu leimes? The Torah itself says they embalmed him, and they said they sat shiva for him, and they buried him. They buried him alive. So Rabbi Yitzchok has to explain himself in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, and he says, "Omar le mikra ani doirish. I'm darshining a pasuk. Where's the pasuk from? Yirmiyahu lamed. What does the pasuk say there? Va'ato al tiro avdi Yaakov. Don't be scared, my servant Yaakov. Lum Hashem, says Hashem. Va'al techas Yisrael. And don't be dismayed, Yisrael. Ki hirani moshiyachu mirochik. I'm going to save you from afar, says Hashem. Ve'es zaracho. Me eretz shivyon v'shov Yaakov v'shokat v'shanan ve'ein macharid. Hashem says, I'm going to save you and your descendants from the land of their captivity, and Yaakov will return. He will have quiet and peace in his life with none to make him afraid, as is said in some shuls. Makish hu lezaroi, says Rabbi Yochanan, based on this pasuk, you see a hekesh, a connection based on the proximity of Yaakov and his progeny, his descendants. Mazaroi b'chayim, afhu b'chayim. Just as Klal Yisrael will never die, and they're not dead, there is a Klal Yisrael, so too there is a Yaakov. Afhu b'chayim. He's also alive. Based on this, Rabbi Yochanan concluded, Yaakov Avinu lo meis. In the face of the Torah, which says, Yaakov Avinu meis. So it's now Rabbi Yochanan darshaning this posuk, Mikra ani doiresh, from a posuk in Tanakh, in Novi, versus the Torah, which says, Ki Mesa Vim, that their father died. So, I mean, what is the resolution of this stira? Another paradox, another contradiction. Did he die or didn't he die? What's the psak? Now, the psak clearly for Rabbi Yochanan and Chazal is that Yaakov Avinu Lo Mes, he didn't die. Problem is, just because you're Mikra Ani Doirish, you're darshining a posuk to that effect, how does that help us with the Metzias that he died? The Torah says he died, they buried him. They embalmed him. He didn't have a pulse. So how do we understand this answer? Enter what I came here to talk about. Enter Reb Leib Chassman. Reb Leib Chassman provides a revolutionary approach to this stira, so we don't have to die from the kasha. There are other stances on this. I mean, you can easily say this is just poetry. Yaakov Avinu lo meis. It's just allegorical. It's figurative speech. It's metaphoric. But it's not real. Reb Leib Chassman has a different approach. And I'd like to share it with you this morning. He says this. If you see a person. Let's say you see your best friend Moshe. And he's walking past Kosher Kingdom. And you stop him in the street and say, good morning, Moshe. And when he speaks, he speaks like your sister Devorah. Now who is it? Devorah or Moshe? It's a stira. What is a person going to believe? Is it his sister or his friend Moshe? Without doubt, a person is going to believe that it's Moshe. Because the power, the chush ha-ra'iyah, the sense, the power of sight, seeing is believing, will always overcome and take precedence over the chush hashmia, the power of the audio faculty of hearing. Therefore you'll conclude, Moshe is the person, and your ears are playing tricks on you. Similarly, says Reb Leib Chassman, with a kal v'chomer, if you hear a report in the Jewish Tribune, an obituary section, that Moshe, Olav HaShalom, died, and then you walk past Kosher Kingdom, and you see him standing there. What are you going to believe? That he's alive or dead? Obviously you're going to conclude that the obituary got it wrong, the Jewish Tribune made a terrible mistake, and it wasn't him. He's alive! Oid Moshe Chai! So again, the power of sight and vision will convince a person that every other piece of evidence that goes to the contrary must be erroneous, wrong, and mistaken. Now we can approach our Gemara, says Reb Leib Chassman. He says, when Reb Yitzchok was saying to Reb Nachman that Yaakov Avinu lo meis, and Reb Nachman said, I don't accept that, they buried him. For nothing, they embalmed him. And what was the teshuvah? Mikra ani doresh. There's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu where there's a hekesh. And the hekesh indicates that Yaakov Avinu is like Klal Yisrael who won't die, and so he won't die. He didn't die either. Afhu b'chayim. He says, Ma teshuvah hizu? What is this answer? Horo'inu shemeis. We know, we can see that he died. The Torah says he died. The Kavru, they buried him. He says, Ulam, however, Chazal Hishmiyanu Bazer. Chazal are teaching us a great secret with this Gemara. She'im nista chush agashmi, al yidei mashim at son of the Torah Kadosha, Ibcha. He says, if we find that our senses, or the senses engaged in the narrative of the Torah, that tell us that they buried Yaakov Avinu, if those senses, which are gashmias dikah senses, which are physical chushim, if they contradict something that we find in the Torah, Chazal look at it like the way we looked at Moshe outside Kosher Kingdom. We heard that he died. We heard with our ears, but we can see him alive. What do I mean by this? What does Reb Leib Chassman mean? He says this. He says, Al Kain, Al Korchach, Masikim Mizeh Shechush Hagashmi Shetoh. If the Torah is saying something, but our physical human senses and perceptions are saying the opposite, we can conclude with confidence that the latter are mistaken, that our ears are deceiving us. He says this, Ki Mekiven Shemikra Ani Doirish. When Rabbi Yitzchok said, that Rabbi Yochanan said, Mikra ani doirish as a hekesh in Yirmiyahu in a posuk in Novi, which indicates that Yaakov Avinu loimes. Al pi aklolim ha'amitiyim shenitnu lanu misinai. And that hekesh was a halachic conclusion of drush based on the emestik aklolim given to the Jewish people at Har Sinai. And it's a glat kosher drusha. Harish HaKadosh Baruch Hu Oimer came. Hashem is telling us Yaakov Avinu Loimes. If Hashem is telling you Yaakov Avinu Loimes, Loimes. That is like seeing Moshe alive outside Kosher Kingdom. Umameila Borur, says Reb Leib Chassman, Shurak Nedam Elohem Shemes. It appeared that Yaakov died. Aval Chai Hoyo. He was alive. He says, "V'zeu ahevdul hagodl v'harichuk hanoira shebein da'atenu l'das Chazal." The gulf between the way that we see the world and the way that Chazal saw the world and see the world. Maybe you pass in loimes. We follow the chushim agashmiim. Seeing is believing. The five senses, that tells us the metzias. The Torah is a load of drushes. The Metzias is what I see out there in the street. For us, Metzias starts there. And the Torah is superimposed on top. For Chazal, it's the complete opposite. He says, these two things are Shnei Hefechim. He says here, that for Chazal, the Torah Nidreshes, Be'enei Kodshon, he says, Ro'es ha-Torah v'chushim k'metzias. U'kushimikra ani doirish b'teilim kol ha-chushim ha-gashmiyim. When the Torah says, even if it's through an unclear, non-mefurish hekish in a posuk in Yirmiyahu, and it clashes with the text of the Torah itself, in the simple narrative, nevertheless, if it's an emestik adrosha based on the kolon given to us at Sinai, that became for Chazal, re'iyah. That is Metzias. There's nothing to discuss. You can show me all the evidence of isotopes and meteorites. And you can show me the carbon layers. It will not for one moment indicate that Maishi is really Devoira. Because I saw him. The part Mikra Ani Dorish means that the Torah is MS. The Torah is Metzias. That is reality. Yaakov was buried. Yaakov was embalmed. And we're not balmy. He was embalmed. Okay. So on some level of reality, it appeared to every human being with their normal faculties that he died. That's what we would call, and we wouldn't be blamed for thinking that he died. But nevertheless, the Torah is revealing through this Hekesh in Yirmiyahu, expounded by Rabbi Yochanan in the Gemara in Taanis, Heilmud Beis, that on some level of reality, and not just a piece of poetry, not just figurative thinking, some level of actual reality, Yaakov lo meis. Do I understand it? No. Can I be blamed for not understanding it? Maybe not. But I have to know, the Mikra Ani Dorish creates a Metzius. On some level of perception and reality, Yaakov didn't die. Now, I can't necessarily understand this totally, but what I have to know, says Reb Leib Chassman, is that we have to know that the way that Chazal appreciated the Torah, the way that Chazal saw this Hekesh, that was as good as seeing him walking around and talking. On some level, Yaakov was different to the rest of humanity and outlived death. The other thing that this Reb Leib Chassman teaches us is that contradictions are only apparent. Stirrers are only nedama. It looks like there's a stirrer. It looks like the world is 14, or the universe is 14 billion years old. And our Torah says it's nearly 6,000 years old. It looks like a stirrer. But even when you have Yaakov died, Yaakov didn't die, there's a teretz. There is a derech, there is an approach to understand both of them, with different levels of reality, whatever that means. So there's no need for doublethink. Orwell wouldn't be proud of us. Baruch Hashem. We don't have to say, Yaakov Loi Meis, when we want to sound frum. And then when we're talking in the street, Yaakov Meis, Shteik Mefurish. With Reb Leib Chassman, we have an approach to understand that there are different levels of seeing things. But if the Torah tells us, even through a Hekesh, Yaakov lo meis, Yaakov lo meis. It's like seeing him walking around. That's the way Chazal saw the Torah. So the difference between people is how they approach stirrers. The Ish Emunah, the man of faith, accepts his inability to understand everything. The question will leave us perplexed, perhaps, and we'll understand that Hashem's Bria is very complex and very complicated in its infinite beauty. But nevertheless, we know that there is a Teretz. Fenakasha shtortman nit means that we can look at kashas with courage and bravery. We are not perplexed or fazed by it. But we have an approach. Do we understand every element of that approach? No, we are not Chazal. But we have to know there is a Chazal. Chazal do have an answer. There was the difference between how we approach contradictions in life was illustrated to me when I heard about a young man who was enrolled at Harvard Law School. And he apparently said that every good law school has to have Jewish professors. And at Harvard, the level is even higher, so they have to have not only Jewish professors, but professors who were Shonu Pirish, who used to be in yeshivas, and left the derech, who left the Torah way. And he added that the 8 young men and women who joined his course in Harvard Law that semester, 4 of them had already abandoned their faith. Why is Harvard Law anathema to faith? And I believe it's this, because the first thing you learn there is that you are the intellectual elite. There is no facet of human understanding or research that you cannot have an opinion on within a couple of weeks of looking up the books. There is no matter how complex or arcane that is beyond your ability to understand. And if you have a kasha, if there is a contradiction between things, it's not a problem in the gavra. It's a problem in the chafza. Not a problem with me, chas v'shalom. There must be some underlying theory which is mistaken in the evidence I have performed, because otherwise it's a contradiction. If you don't understand it, it is wrong, not you. The Torah declares that Yaakov was mummified and buried. He was absolutely dead and not alive at all. Harvard Law with Paskin, Aim Mikra Yitzabidip Shutai. Chazal Paskin, we have to have humility. We have to have anova. We know that we can't answer everything. But we have to know also that there is an MS. There isn't just double thing, there is an approach. Chazal saw reality as Torah. Maybe we can't on their level. But we should know that they could. So Chazal have the answer. We may not totally get it. But for Nakasha, Shtopman nit. Or maybe we should say now, for Nakasha, Loimes. Thank you.